Okay, today is Monday, December 19th, 2011, and we're beginning a little later, and we also have to end the drop earlier, so the next class will begin a little later. We readjusted the schedule today because we had a Brit, as a Zaymet Mazel, and it was a very unique Brit. The name of the boy is Chaim Yosef David Ben Yosef Chaim Ben Yosef Chaim. In other words, right, the grandfather's also Yosef Chaim, and they're all alive and well. And the Mohel and the Sandak, Rav Asher Weiss, almost fainted with the naming, and Rakefet saved the situation with two magic words, Eidot HaMizrach. The minute I said Eidot HaMizrach, anything goes. They can get away with anything. Okay, anyway, we saw last week that the Satmar Rebbe's thinking, and by the way, if you want to see the present Satmar Rebbe and see how powerful Satmar is, yesterday was the anniversary of the Rebbe's being rescued from Hitler by the Zionist movement, and they had a big Suda in the armory in Williamsburg, I think it is, in Brooklyn. And Rabbi Arla Teitelbaum spoke, and among the enemies that he attacked were the Zionist movement. So, of course, it all goes back to the very Zionist movement that saved his great uncle and enabled Satmar to continue. They get attacked at the Sudat Hodaya. Being as it was, I also showed you that even in the Litvish Welt, certainly Rabbi Chanan Wasserman in the Ikva to the Meshichata, it's certainly a document, and it was translated in Tiglish in 48. It's a document, I would say, even beyond Agudat Yisrael's position. Then I showed you Rav Shach, and what can I tell you? It's, you know, frightening that Rav Shach could write that this is Maaseh Satan, and the worst experience the Jews have ever had in Gullus is the Gullus in the state of Israel. And nevertheless, he wrote it. It was published. Someday, some psychologist will do a study of Rav Shach's family. And as usual, parents teach one lesson, children go another way. And to a certain degree, it causes pain to see in Rav Shach's family already the third generation knows less, the fourth generation knows even less, and it could be that with this extremism at that moment in time, it drives children into a different position, and ultimately they remember they had a great, use it as an adjective, grandfather, but they no longer feel his messages reliable or valuable or practical. I showed you advertisements that come from the Turikata, which to a certain degree represent Satmar, although I have a feeling that today it's not so, and that today the Turikata is a fringe element even beyond Satmar. But one thing is for sure, one thing is for certain, that people who criticize the state of Israel and demonstrate and give the goyim a chance to attack us and criticize us, ein lehem chelik d'olam haba, these people are porish min hatzibur in the full sense of the word. And there's a lot to discuss, it's not for now, but this was a very basic teaching of Mori Rebbe Rav Soloveitchik. And this is the whole concept of Fuk Hazimai, the Amud Devar. We can't be overly wise. We can't separate from the totality of the Jewish people. We can't separate ourselves from the totality of the Torah people. And we can be the firmest people in the world, but if we lock ourselves in a secluded village, you understand there's a very delicate question here. What about Am Yisrael? So you're a tzaddik, but in Yiddish Sakman, a tzaddik in Pels. It's a tzaddik with a fur coat sitting in a corner. What about the other people? And there's a beautiful Hasidic story, which I don't know if I ever told in the Kollel, but it's related that a chassid came to a Rebbe. I think it's told about the sons of it, but I may be wrong. A chassid came and he said to the Rebbe, I'm a big tzaddik. I don't sleep on a mattress. I sleep on straw. All I do is eat a little stale bread and drink water. And the Rebbe says, come to the window, and he says, what do you see outside? He says, I see a donkey. He says, what do you think the donkey sleeps on? Straw. What do you think the donkey eats? Stale bread and drinks water. Are you a good Jew or are you a donkey? And of course, this is the whole concept of being part of Klal Yisrael and Am Yisrael. And to a certain degree, this is the strength of Chabad. When you look at Chabad, and so much was written over the weekend, it's the famous Yutet Kislev, and the anniversary of the first Rebbe's coming out of jail, and so much was written about the Lubavitcher Rebbe, and pro and con, and the whole Messianic complex, and did the Rebbe think he was Mashiach? Didn't he think he was Mashiach? But when all is said and done about Chabad, they love Klal Yisrael. And if you look in today's New York Times to the Metro Diary, I don't know how many of you are New Yorkers, but every Monday I make it my business to bring my wife the Metro Diary from the New York Times, because we're born and bred New Yorkers. And the first item in the Metro Diary today is about Chabad. And it is so typical Chabad, and it's... You have to read it and think about it. Don't just read it superficially. And that's Chabad, and that's their greatness. And Satmar, at least Satmar in the 1950s, early 50s, mid-50s, how terrible the nations of the world, their hands are covered with the blood of the Jews, and they're demonstrating against the state of Israel. Okay, then I shifted gears. Always repeat, I'm a Talmud of the Rav. I have to do as my Rebbe did, and it's the only way to teach. You have to repeat what you did, the new lecture, summarize, and coming attractions. And Yitzchak, you missed quite a morning. You know who the Sandak on the Brit was? Rav Asher Weiss. And do you know that yours truly saved his life? He almost had heart failure here. That you don't know. You missed it. You missed my introduction. The baby's name. They're naming the baby. Chaim Yosef David Ben Yosef Chaim. And the Mo and Rav Weiss. So look, what, when, where? The father. Rakefet saved the situation. Two magic words. Eidot HaMizrach. Oh, did they break into a smile? You can get away with anything, let me tell you. Unbelievable. And you saw my drasha about the Shemesh at the... Take a look who got up and spoke after me. If that wasn't the Shemesh, I don't know what was. You follow? You follow me, Michael? Mama, she played right into my hands. It was unbelievable. It made me... I told them that I spoke about him in Shia, and I tied him into the Shia Tat, and I showed him I was holding the latest issue of his Chidush Torah given to me this morning. I asked him if he recognizes it. I sent him regards from his Talmud Mufak, Dr. Sam Dershowitz, my neighbor and Gabbai of my minyan. Okay, now I want to move forward, and I want to come into a very serious question. And this is a question that all of us have been asked 100,000 times over. If you're in chinuch, you're asked the question 100,000 times. If you're stama balabas, you've faced this question thousands of times. Everyone has criticisms about the state of Israel. Everyone is critical. Every fault, everyone's looking with a magnifying glass. Urei v'tuv Yerushalayim kol yemei chayecha. So they evidently interpreted to mean Urei v'tuv Yerushalayim liacha kol yemei chayecha. After, when you're gone and in heaven, then you see tuv. But kol zman you're alive, everyone is critical. And of course, some of these criticisms are real. I understand it. I live here. I know I can be as critical as anyone, even more critical, because I'm living here longer than anyone in this room. And I know the inner workings of the government. And when you live here 43 years, you know you've lived in... I have many vetlach, but one of my vetlach that you cry and laugh is, you know, you lived in Israel too long when every modat evil, you know, the person who died. I walk around with Yerushalayim and I see all these modat evil. This one died, that one died. 80% of them, I know who they are. I know I lived here too long. And I can be as critical as anyone. But so what do you answer these people who are so critical? So, of course, I said last week, with all the criticisms in the world, look what we have achieved, look what we have. And I spoke about the kol d'vikat, and I take for granted, you know, the Rav's kol d'vikat d'ofek. I don't want to repeat it in class. Rabbi Rubin said to me after class, why do you take it for granted? Many people may not know, but you can listen to the tapes that the OU put out. I recorded 9 hours in the kollel at the Rav's 10th yahrzeit. It's my best effort ever on the Rav in religious Zionism. So, of course, the Rav developed in his talk in 1956 on the anniversary of the State of Israel, the 8th anniversary, in Lamport Auditorium. My wife and I, was then my, I think I knew her, yeah, she was my girlfriend already. she was my girlfriend already. So we were sitting in the Lamport Auditorium, and we heard this amazing talk that the Rav gave, and he spoke about 6 miracles. And I added 2 more last week, 2 very important concepts. I spoke about the Yerushalmi and Peah, the fact that there's mutual support here, that the people, there's kindness, and you don't have to go any further than the social services here, how many billions of shekel are poured into helping the needy, the poor, the hospitals, and my own experience now with my mother. My brother and I are both overwhelmed. My brother, who's a medical doctor, says in America, and he practiced in America before he came in Aliyah in 73, he knows a little bit about America. In America, they wouldn't have done anything. A woman, 98 years old. Canada, you know, they went to court. An 82-year-old man had to go to court to get medical attention a year and a half ago. And here, it's just a beautiful system. It has faults, it has faults. But we're ahead of America, we're ahead of Canada, ahead of England, with all the socialized medicine, ahead of Russia. All the Arab countries send their people here for operations. As you know, Hadassah Ein Kerem and Hadassah and Mount Scopus has a tremendous income that comes from the oil-producing Arab states. So you have to give Israel credit. That's number one. Number two, I added another miracle, a miracle that we all benefit from. Here's a country at war, a country that struggles, a country that hasn't had a day that it didn't need a standing army of tens of thousands today, hundreds of thousands. My ninth grandson just went into the army 2 weeks ago, and I have another one going in. It'll be my 10th grandson in the army. And we all live, and with it all, there's more Torah study and more Torah learning and more sperm being published. And it's overwhelming what has happened here. It's beyond words. I mean, I'm very critical of the Haredi world. They've gone out. It's not the whole Haredi world, but there's an element there. But imagine, who would ever dream that the government of the State of Israel, the Memshalah, met on Sunday, and one of the prime topics they discussed was separate seating on buses. So on one hand, you can look at it and be very upset that this is what we've come to, separate seating on buses, it's this Torah, it's this religion, that Acher Dachei Noam, men should get up and give their seats to women. I can tell you a story with the Rav. I don't want to mention the name, but this is a totally true story. This is 100% true. I've told this story before, but it's worth repeating in context now. A prominent Rosh Yeshiva in YU came from a Hungarian home. And the father, Shabbos morning after Kiddush, would take his son and learn Gemara with him. The daughter, no, that's not for learning, that's not for Gemara. Go into the kitchen and help your mother. Later on, the girl went to what's the Columbia University School for Women? What's it called? Barnard, right. So the girl went to Barnard, and she started to question, what's this religion about? Here's a brilliant girl on the dean's list, a 3.9 average, and her father won't teach her Gemara. And she was really starting to ask questions and to doubt. Then there was a family wedding, and her brother said, you know what, take the train up to Yeshiva University, meet me in first hall. When I finish here, I'll come downstairs, I'll meet you, and I'll drive you to the wedding. So she comes, and she's sitting in first hall studying a textbook, and her brother comes downstairs, shir is over, there's her brother, and in the elevator with her brother is Mori Rebbe, Moreno Rabbeinu Rab Soloveitchik, and the Rebbe is walking with I don't want to mention the name, this Rosh Yeshiva, and he says, Rebbe, this is my sister, and introduces his sister, says, Esther, this is Rav Soloveitchik, hi, hi. They reach the door, so the brother and sister stand aside, the Rav should walk out first. The Rav says, no, 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 ladies first. And the Rav holds the door for her to and insists that she walk out first. At that moment, all her doubts disappeared, and she embraced the Torah, b'lev v'nefesh. So you see, on one hand, as a Torah Jew, it hurts me that this is an issue. Women, bus, talitha, you know, the incident that happened Friday, I don't think about the details, you read the papers, the incident that happened Friday on the bus to Ashdod or Ashkelon, whatever it was, and the lady who stood up to that man and refused to move to the back, she's now a Rosa Parks, she's now a hero here. On the other hand, take a look that the government of Israel has to meet and discuss a tznius issue, separate seating on buses. Look where we're at today. This is a country where Chilul Shabbat was rampant. Mandach HaShemei, whoever heard Kashrut Mikvot, and today, after so many years, and Kainayin Hara, the Jew who came, the vision, everything I spoke about a few minutes ago at the Brit Mila, the vision, the dream, what Chazal say, kon halon shiliyamin below halon nikrab ra, and take a look what we have achieved. We should be so proud. Okay. And then I quoted, and Rabbi Rubin and some of you were very impressed. I quoted, impressed with what I quoted from Phil Chernovsky at the OU Center, the Torah Tidbits. That what are you criticizing for? Why aren't you celebrating Yom HaTzmut? The Jews celebrated Purim. No, look what happened after Purim. A long exile. Jews celebrated Hanukkah. Look what happened after Hanukkah. There was called Bayit Sheni. Look, we celebrate Shavuot. Moshe came down with the Lucha Tabrit, and a minute later we danced around the Nagel. And it's a beautiful point. Who says everything has to be perfect? It's not just Yemot HaMashiach, but we have to celebrate that which we have. Okay? And now let me go further, and let me say something else. What's very important, and I always say this, and I give you a life experience. You walk into a shtibbel in Borough Park, and I don't want to condemn Borough Park. There are many good Jews there, and I have enough problems with my grandchildren who read the news, and 85 arrests, and pedophiles, and a kid murdered by a Jew. There's a lot of happening in Borough Park, and if you read the weekend papers, particularly Yediot Ahronot, had a tremendous investigative reported article on Borough Park. I cry, I just very moving, and you cry when you read it, because they retraced the steps of that poor boy, Leib Ukletsky, step by step. But there are a lot of good Jews in Borough Park. But you walk into a shtibbel, and there was one Jew in the shtibbel. He doesn't daven there anymore, because the balabatim threw him out because he was disrespectful to me. I have to tell you, they told him off. But this Jew came over to me, and he's giving me arguments, you know, I became a target. I'm a Zionist. I'm a religious Zionist. So I always say, whenever people argue with me, I always say to them, you're right, you're absolutely right. So why don't you come on Aliyah and help make it better? Isn't that our purpose in life? L'taken olam b'malchut kadai? To make the world a better world? To make the world... The Rebbe didn't pronounce that word, so I'm not pronouncing it. L'taken olam, didn't we make the world? Isn't that our goal? Aren't we supposed to do our share? What are you staying in America for? What Israel is up to us. And you know, when you say that to people, Israel's a democracy. You, your wife, your children, gives us another 10 votes. That would be fabulous. Come in Aliyah. If Torah and Shabbat and Kashrut concerns you so, come in Aliyah and do your share in making it better. And this is, I have to be honest with you, before I went to Russia, before the branch of the Mossad, Nativ, sent me to Russia the first time, I could be so critical of democracy. In this very building, again, what I spoke about at the Brit Mila, in this very building, you know, I would entertain my students, college kids like to be entertained. I would show them all the faults of democracy. I would call from Alexis de Tocqueville. And you understand, democracy has a built-in fault because democracy teaches you the majority is always right. And Moshe Rapps is now suffering from the time he was in kindergarten at the age of 5. One day, it was a beautiful spring day, the sun was shining, everything I spoke about a minute ago, oh what a beautiful morning, oh what a beautiful day, and the teacher said, young people, what should we do today? Should we go to the park and play, or should we go to the library and see the new books? And she put it to a vote. And Moshe was the only one who voted go to the library. And 30 other kids laughed at him and dunked him and made fun of him. Sissy, library, what are you, an egghead, etc. You see, that's a built-in fault of democracy. Because Moshe walked out feeling second rate. You understand? This is Alexis de Tocqueville. Take a look in New York today. Do you know that I can be put on trial for making a statement against homosexual marriage? My daughter called me yesterday and she said, Abba, I'm going to tell you something you won't believe your ears. A judge just ruled. This is a woman who descends from Gedolei Yisrael. She's married, quote, end quote, to another woman, and they just are raising, adopted a girl. The girl has two mothers, not a father, not a mother, two mothers, a 5-year-old girl. Just yesterday, the judge ruled her as one of the parents. I mean, this judge, God have mercy, what we're talking about. It's a Rechavdi judge, obviously, if you know what that term means today, slang in Israel. So, Israel, democracy has faults. But after seeing the communist system, boy, did I come back a believer in democracy. With all its faults, it's a lot better than communism. Socialism, communism, they have not worked. Democracy is democracy. Israel's a democracy. And you can change the world here. What are you complaining? What are you being critical? Come, cast in your vote. And I'll never forget 1977. I have to tell you, it was a day, a week to remember. When Begin was elected, when it became clear that Begin would become the prime minister, do you have any idea what that meant? Do you know that Ben-Gurion used to boast, Lo Maki Velo Cheirut? He would never create a government. You know what Maki was? Miflaga Communistic Israelit, the Israeli Communist Party. Not the communist and not Cheirut, to put it into your language. Yemach Shmam B'Zichram. That was Ben-Gurion's boast. And in 77, Begin becoming prime minister. I never forget, they interviewed the Ben-Aharon, Yitzchak Ben-Aharon. I mentioned that name, I inverted it last time. He was the head of the Histadrut. The man lived to be 98 or something. A totally anti-religious. And they interviewed him, and he said, we have to have the elections again. So they said, Mr. Ben-Aharon, aren't you a believer in democracy? He said, not when the results are that Menachem Begin is prime minister. That's the Ben-Aharon that I told you about, that his grandson was a Talmud Mufak of Rabbi Yehuda Amital and Rabbi Aaron Lichtenstein, and they asked him in his old age, he was still an idiot. The guy never came home. In his old age, they said, how do you feel about your grandson being such a great Talmud Chacham? And he said, my grandson made a mistake. They interviewed the grandson. The grandson says, I don't want to discuss my grandfather. He made his choices. I'm entitled to make my choices. Kanayin Hara. Okay, but it's up to us. And here I quote to you what I mentioned to you in class, and I put it into context now. 1976, February 9th, from Hatzofeh. Hatzofeh used to be the daily newspaper of the Mizrahi Party. Today, we don't have, in the Mizrahi world, we spoke about it, it's not important now, we don't have a daily newspaper, there's not a Mizrahi crowd, it's so integrated on the public scene that Mizrahi people read Yediyot, read Mariv, and if they're really right-wingers, so they get Mekor Rishon, it's right-wing politically, so Mekor Rishon has become a daily newspaper. But that's where I got the story, I lived it. Midrashia Noam, which was one of the first yeshiva high schools dedicated a library in memory of their soldiers that fell in the various wars. And the chief of staff, Mordechai Gur, came to speak, and never forget his words. He said, "When I was a young officer in the army, military rabbis had to come around to us, begging us, take in a religious boy." Today, he says, and this is 1974, we're talking almost, what are we talking about? Almost 40 years ago, am I correct? Almost 40 years ago, he says, "Today the commanders come to me as chief of staff, pleading with me, give us Yeshiva Hesda boys. They're the best soldiers. They don't rob, they don't steal, they don't curse, they don't cheat." By and large, again, there are always going to be sinners. You never lose your faith because there's a sinner. Never forget that. Never forget what I told you years ago, and I write about it in the Suva year, and it's been quoted and requoted, and it's Simon Wiesenthal I got it from. But in the Suva, it becomes popularized in our circles. So Simon Wiesenthal tells the story that in the DP camps in 46, Reb Lazer Suva came in with $100,000 sewn into his coat, the inside of his coat, and he's giving out money, and they're dedicating a new shul, and they're dedicating a Sefer Torah, and Reb Lazer comes to Simon, and he says, and Simon already was a leader, a lay leader of the people, and Reb Lazer says to him, "Nushimin du veskumen, you're going to come tomorrow to the dedication of the Torah?" And Wiesenthal says, "No, I hate religious Jews." So Reb Lazer Suva says to him, "Why do you hate religious Jews?" He says, "Rabbi Suva, I'm going to tell you what I saw with my own eyes." And he tells him the story in a death camp where one Jew smuggled in tefillin. And 12 midnight Jews would line up to put on tefillin. And they had to pay the man a piece of bread from their meager rations. They had to give this Jew who smuggled in the tefillin a piece of bread. And he says, "That's what a man did for tefillin." And Reb Lazer said to him, "Simon, Simon, I never knew you were so foolish. Why do you talk about the evil of the man who smuggled in the tefillin and charged the bread? Why don't you speak about the dedication of the people who waited online and were willing to give away a piece of their nourishment, a piece of their bread, a piece of their meager rations, so they should have the schut of putting on tefillin?" And Wiesenthal bowed his head and said, "Rabbi Suva, you have taught me something." And he came to the dedication. And you're always going to have sinners, but look at the masses, look at the crowd, look at the Hesda boys, look at the dedication, look what we have built. And there's another point, particularly in the Kollel. I want to be sharp and clear, and I want you to understand me. A lot of you young people have a wonderful vision. Some of you are Balei Tshuva yourself, some of you are the children of Balei Tshuva. It's an amazing world today. I write about it on Washington Avenue, and people have thanked me for the book, simply that their children should understand what it was like to grow up. You're the only kid for blocks around who show me Shabbos. Echad be'ir, shnayim b'medina, I quote the prophet in Washington. And it's so true. Today, thank God, it's miraculous and it's fabulous. On the other hand, of course, when you have 2, 3, 4 million Jews that are Shomer Shabbos, not everyone is on the level. When you had 100,000 and to be Shomer Shabbos, you really had to make a commitment. So young rabbis say to me, "Rebbe, we want to go back, we want to change the world, we want to make every Jew free, we want to be like you." And the truth, when I graduated yeshiva, the age of 23, 1961, I had one dream, to make every Jew in America Shomer Shabbos. That is correct. Youth has the dream. Fine. I want to tell you, if you have that dream, there's only one place in the world where you can do it, and that is in the state of Israel. It's like buying a stock. If you know one stock is going to bring in 2% and one stock is going to bring in 20%, you got to be an idiot to put your money into the stock for 2%. And America, you reach out, you try, you do, you encourage, you're fighting against such odds. What happens here in Israel affects the entire Jewish world. You have no idea how the eyes of the diaspora are upon us. We cough, we sneeze here. It's already discussion upon discussion outside the state of Israel. You want to make the diaspora firm? You know what it meant in 1974? They issued a stamp in memory of the thousands who fell in the Yom Kippur War. You look at that stamp, it's a collector's item. It's a faceless Jew with his back towards you, davening with the talus over his head. That symbolizes the Yom Kippur War. Do you know in how many conservative and reform synagogues they started to buy proper talisim as a result, or taliyot in proper Hebrew? You talk about a kippah. I write about it in Washington when I walked into Temple Emmanuel with my sidekick and my friend and my chavruta, Harav Chaim Noble, and Noble and I walked in, Chaim and I walked in, Howie Noble and Arnie Rothkopf walk in, and the sexton in his German accented English tells us that we have to take our skull caps up, or if you cannot enter the chapel wearing a skull cap. Today, in every Reform synagogue, you may wear a skull cap. That is a result of the state of Israel. Whenever there's news, whenever there's a wedding, whenever there's a big event, I don't want to mention the word funeral, you see all the leaders in the state of Israel with kippot on their head. The eyes of the diaspora are upon us. Halavai, we should have a prime minister who would be a real total Shomer Shabbos. You don't know what an impact that would make. Menachem Begin. And Menachem Begin is a very interesting individual. He was an inverted Krembo, if you know that expression. They call a Krembo someone who's black on the outside, white on the inside. He was a Krembo. On the outside, he was the firmest Jew alive. On the inside of his own home, he did not give his own children a Torah education. And you see the price that his forebears pay in the descendants of Menachem Begin. In the memoir about the prime ministers, you can read about this too. He makes the point. But when Menachem Begin came to America the first time after he becomes prime minister, and he's going to see the president of the United States, and it's during the 9 days, not only does he insist upon kosher food, but he insists upon fish or milchix. He cannot eat meat during the 9 days. And the New York Times, the bastion of Reform Judaism, some of their most famous writers were children of the Reform anti-Zionist rabbis. The New York Times had to explain to the world what the 9 days are about, what the 3 weeks are about, what Churban Bayit is about, what Tisha B'Av is about, and all a result of Rabbi Menachem Begin. So at that moment, I call him Reb Menachem Begin. He was a dilemma, a paradox. But publicly, Baruch Hashem. Baruch Hashem, as I told you, Yosef Borg said very insightfully, every time Menachem Begin says Baruch Hashem, Mizrahi loses another 10,000 votes. And we have to understand, this is Israel. You want to make it better? You want to influence? You want to reach out? Build. Build properly. Build the country in sanctity. Vote properly. Let's have leaders that are, there is continuity to David Melech Yisrael. Halavai, the day will come that we'll have a president, and when the president of the state of Israel gets off the plane at JFK and all eyes are upon him, his aide-de-camp will follow him with a miniature Sefer Torah. Who are we talking about? What was the law with the king of Israel? He had to have a Mishnah Torah at all times with him. And that's exactly, could you imagine a president with a miniature Sefer Torah held by his aide-de-camp as he deplanes, to use a new word that was recently coined, as he deplanes upon American soil, Canadian soil, British soil, French soil, Russian soil, and Jews who are seeking and searching Jewish identity? What an example. What an inspiration. And I want to say something else about the state of Israel. One of the saddest sights in the Golah, and today they make a living out of it, taking you on tours. You go on tours, what do you see? Deserted synagogues. What once was Cordova, they tell me there's not a Jew left in Cordova, where the greatest of the Rishonim lived. Go to New York. I challenge anyone who grew up in a big city, can you go back to the shul in which you were bar mitzvahed? Just think for a minute. The shul where I was bar mitzvahed, it's a church. There are pictures of it. I was in Seattle, downtown, where it all began. Beautiful building, Mug and David on it. The original plaques are on it. A church today. Very nice people. They don't take off the Jewish symbols. They're proud. They bought a shul. They bought a synagogue. And they turned it into a church. Can you go back to where you were bar mitzvah? Can you go back to the Lower East Side? The father of the Yerachanim spoke about his grandfather was a rabbi in the Lower East Side. Did he mean his father's father or his mother's father? Because I don't recall a Dota Mizrach on the Lower East Side. Can you go back to shul now? They have 2-3 old shuls refurbished, their national shrines. The East Side today is totally Chinatown. I remembered in my youth, you knew where the border was to Chinatown. There was a tremendous East Side, Jewish East Side, yeshiva, shtibbles. Today, the Chinese have come all the way over to the end of Canal Street, to the big park, Seward Park, where the forward building still stands, nothing to do with Jews today. It's all over, worthless, property, London, go wherever you want, changing neighborhoods. Labriot, look at Israel. You built here, Meir Sharim today is worth in terms of money and adjusting it, indexing the money. Meir Sharim today is worth 100 times what it was worth 150 years ago when Meir Sharim was first built, or 140 years ago. Just every Baal Teshuva in the world, what a dream to live in Meir Sharim, to live near the Reb Arolin's, to live near the Breslovers. Real estate. Buildings. Take a look at the buildings in Israel, the yeshiva, beautiful buildings, neighborhoods, building more Torah and more Torah and more from families and more housing developments and more children. And it lasts, it's permanent. This is Israel. What it is up to us. Stop criticizing. Do you go around in New York knocking on people's doors and say, are you Jewish? Yes. Do you keep kosher? No. Let me in here and beat the hell out of you. You don't keep kosher. It's a democracy. We don't beat anyone up. Israel, what do you want us to do? The people who built the country, why didn't the Belz Chassidim come? Why didn't the Munkach Chassidim come? Why didn't the Satmar Chassidim come? Why didn't the Telz and Slabodka Yeshiva boys come? With me Yeshiva, we had a miracle due to one Japanese non-Jew, Sempo Sugihara, Zeichet Tzadik Levracha. Who built the country? The Zionist, in rebellion, hatred, enmity for religion. Everything you say is right. But it's a democracy. You don't chop people's heads off in America because they're not Shemesh Shabbos. Why do you expect us to do it here? Be positive. Come. Build. Set an example. And wow, what we have achieved. that the government has nothing better to do this past Sunday than to discuss women sitting in the back of buses. No one already is discussing Shabbat, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha. The Army, the Air Force just built a new mikveh for $100,000 down south. One Jew donated the money. The women complained they had to go to Beersheba. It was a long trip to go to mikveh. They built a state-of-the-art mikveh in one of the frontline Air Force bases in the country. Build. At last. It's here. You want to influence. Look at these birthright kids. Hundreds of... This past Friday night at the Kotel, I estimated 20,000 people were there. It was unbelievable. You were there, right? You weren't there this Friday night. Who walked me? Oh, Steve walked me. Right. It was unbelievable. All the way to Shashpat, the weather was great. I looked around. Who? There weren't American tourists. There were Gentile tourists. There were Europeans. But the birthright kids, thousands upon thousands. And these youngsters never saw Yiddishkeit. What do they know? What have they experienced? And you can turn them around. They're seeking, they're searching, they're looking. They have a Jewish soul. What I wrote about in Washington, when I meet the Shanghai crowd, we didn't speak the same language. Who spoke Yiddish then? I'm a third generation American. I had to break my teeth to learn Yiddish. They didn't know baseball. But our souls understood each other. A Jewish youngster is searching, seeking. Your soul craves. It's pure. We're not animals. I was once asked in the Army, in a big Air Force base, a high-ranking officer, how do you know that God exists? And I shot back at him, the very fact that you're asking shows me God exists. What bothers you? What troubles you? What do you lack? Rank, money, prestige. I'm sure you're married. I didn't want to say to him, you can have any woman you want, etc., etc. I'm going to be vulgar. In other words, you should know he became a total Baal Tshuva. He was seeking and searching. But what craves within you? Vayipach midalei, the sforno, on God, part of God's soul. The soul is in every human. And we just can't be happy like an animal. It's not just food, drink, clothes, women and song. We need something. And the Jew is searching. Comes to the Kotel, his eyes open. You have no idea the impression. And here I want to share with you one of the most beautiful sources. If you'll ever need a bar mitzvah drasha, and there's a whole story behind this. I'm quoting to you, and this is the original edition. You have to be very careful when you quote from Rabbi Chiyu Yaakov Weinberg, the Sri Deyesh. I'm quoting from the original edition, the Mosad Rav Kook edition, Chelik Gimel, Siman Pei Dalet. It's marked Hadran L'Mesechet Bab Metzia, and it's a siyum that a Bar Mitzvah boy made, and Rabbi Chiyu Yaakov is speaking at the siyum, and goes into Machshava, which I'll quote in a minute. In order to appreciate this, we need a few words of background that tie us together with the saga of the Torah people in modern times. As you all know, and I'll come to him in this class, if not this year, I have, because in this year I'm going to go into Das Torah, and that's going to take quite a few lectures. But if I don't come to Rabbi Chiyu Yaakov this year, I'll come to him next year, Be'ezrat Hashem, when I deal with people who try to integrate Torah and Western culture. Rabbi Chiyu Yaakov, born in, I believe it was 1885. I write about him. I have a monograph on him in Rakafet Aaron, and I think it's Chelik Bet. You can check it out. And I was privileged to inspire a student in the room down at the other end of the hall. I can show you exactly where Mark Shapiro was sitting 30 years ago. And I gave a lecture to Rabbi Chiyu Yaakov Weinberg, and Go and Dream, as he writes in his introduction. I first heard about Rabbi Weinberg from my Rebbe in BMT, Rav Rakefet, and he went on to do the last doctorate done under the tutelage of Professor Yitzchak Twesky at Harvard before Professor Rabbi Dr. Twesky's untimely death. And Bechir Yaakov, very fascinating individual, tremendous mind. But he had a traumatic experience as a kid. Do you know the story? He was on a train and he was going to a certain city, and he spoke with the train conductor where to get off, and because he couldn't speak the language of the land, he did not speak Russian, he only spoke Yiddish, they misunderstood each other, and he got off at the wrong stop, and he had to wait a full day until another train came, and he had to sit in the train station, he knew nobody there. It was a traumatic experience. And Reb Nosson Kamenetsky got put into Cheirem, as you know, for writing these true stories. And Reb Chil Yaakov made up his mind to learn Russian. And once he was exposed to Russian, he sought general knowledge. He winds up in Berlin afterwards, being very brief, winds up rector of the Hildesheimer Rabbinic Seminary, a man who was a great Talmud Chacham, who had a PhD in Semitics, had a wealth of general knowledge, but had a very sad personal life, had married the Altov Slabatka, cajoled him into getting married with a Rebbe's daughter, the Altov hoping that by marrying this girl and taking on a rabbinate, he would not seek general culture and would remain firm. And the marriage didn't work out, and he ran away from the rabbinate in Pulvishki. It was her father's shtela, the father had died, and he winds up in Berlin, and then the Holocaust comes, and he survives with miracles. He has no place to go, and in 1946, a family in Switzerland, family associated with the Eitz Chaim Yeshiva, takes him in. The father of the family, Reb Shaul Weingart, had been his Talmud in Berlin in the 30s. And they were a well-to-do family. The family takes no salary from the yeshiva, but they run a clothing store for women, elegant clothing, and they have money, and they build him what's called a mother-daughter house. In other words, they have the main house and the little addendum, which is a separate unit for Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg. However, you just heard a drasha on it, Ein Mazal Yisrael, and in 1946, the Rebbe and his Talmud would always eat lunch together, and they got involved talking and learning what the Talmud was going to give a shir on in the yeshiva, and he was waiting for the trolley car, and the trolley car ran him over. He was eingetracht. How do you say that in English? I don't know, but totally absorbed in his thinking and learning, didn't see the trolley car. The trolley car ran Reb Shaul Weingart over. And here's Reb Yechiel Yaakov, once again widowed, orphaned, terrible. The widow tells him, Rebbe, you'll remain with us. And they had a little boy that was just growing up named Avram Abba. And raise our Avram Abbas if you're his father. And Avram Abba Weingart, Rabbi Dr. Avram Abba Weingart, married to my first student in Mechala, Yona Levi, in Hebrew, and a Israeli girl who lived across the street from me, very brilliant lady. And Avram Abba grew up in the lap of Rabbi Chil Yaakov Weinberg. Then came his bar mitzvah. And at the bar mitzvah, Rabbi Chil Yaakov gives the Hadran on the Masechet that the little boy had just finished, but Metziah, and then he speaks on the Pasuk in Pashat Shoftim in the Varim, Perek Chof, Pasuk Yutet, Ha'adam Eitz HaSadeh, Ki Ha'adam Eitz HaSadeh Lavol Lefanecha B'Matzar, and it's talking about in that Pasha where you're not allowed to knock down trees, and necessarily it's the basis of Baal Tashchet, of destroying something without reason, even when you're fighting a war, but you can't cut down trees just for the sake of cutting them down. And Ki Hadam Eitz HaSadeh, it's a question. Why are you mad at the tree? The tree's not a person, the tree's not a German. The tree's not a Hamas person, not a Hezbollah person. The tree's not Iran. The tree's not an enemy. Ki ha'dam eitzah sadeh. And Rabbi Chil Yaakov says so beautifully to this bar mitzvah boy. But look, the Torah has a thought here that a person can be compared to a tree. Eitzah sadeh. Ki ha'dam eitzah sadeh. What does it mean you can be compared to a tree? What does a tree need to grow? And Rabbi Chil Yaakov explains a tree needs two things. Good soil and the proper environment. Rain, the nutrients it gets from the air. You need both. And Rabbi Chil Yaakov says to this little boy so beautifully, in Gullus, at the most, a Jew can build himself a little abode, a little synagogue, a little Beis Medrash. Inside, the ground is Jewish. The environment is Torah. But the minute he leaves that Beis Medrash, he's caught up in an alien environment. In an alien culture, it's no longer Jewish. Eretz Yisrael, Rabbi Chil says, the very ground is holy. The very environment is holy. It's not just the Beis Medrash. It's not just the Beit Knesset. Avira di aramachim, our sages tell us. The very environment, the very air that envelops you, inspires you. It's Eretz Yisrael. There you have the healthiest Jewish trees. You don't have to limit it to a Beit Medrash or a Beit Knesset. And he says so beautifully, unlike the alien soil in which we dwell today, Avo b'shvil Yehudi tov sheyavo b'yishtaka b'eretz Yisrael Shem hakol kodesh, hakol Yehudi ha'aretz, ha'avir, ha'sviva, ha'bayit v'hashuk. And he encourages this little boy, go on Aliyah. And I don't think it could ever be said any better than the way Rabbi Chil Yaakov inspired this little Avraham Abba. And I need not add, today there are tens and tens of direct descendants of Rav Avraham Abba and his wonderful wife, Yona, Alat Mata Kodesh. And perhaps it all goes back to this beautiful drasha that Rabbi Chil Yaakov preached. And I just want to add one postscript. You might want to ask a question. Why didn't Rabbi Chil Yaakov come in Aliyah? He preached such a beautiful drasha. And you see, he was a very sad individual. It's a very tragic individual. I'll explain myself in 1 second, you'll understand. Baruch ator, then I let Malach Olam Shekhani withdraw. You see, the Rav grew up in Brisk. But the Rav went way beyond Brisk. And he was totally at home in Boston, ultimately. It's not that Brisk did not remain part of him, but Boston did not conflict with Brisk. It supplemented, it complemented Brisk. I don't think you can say it any better about the Rav, but that was the Rav. There was not the culture conflict. I don't want to use a cheap word. It was a synthesis. And if you don't like the word synthesis, use the word Rakefet coin. Harmonious coexistence. And there was no conflict. We learned with the Rav. Yitzchak and I can testify. You could talk with the Rav in learning, and you could talk with the Rav about chemistry and mathematics and art, and music and politics and contemporary civilization and philosophy, of course, both Jewish and non-Jewish. He knew everything. And there was no conflict. It's right there. Rabbi Chiel Yaakov greatly broadened. But there was a conflict within his soul. He could never leave Slabodka. On one hand, he was still that Slabodka yeshiva student sitting at the feet of the altar of Slabodka, Reb Natan Zvi Finkel. Could never get it out of his system. He couldn't compliment. On the other hand, he was a man of the world. PhD. Genius. Knowledgeable. Universal. Had little trends. Read his writings. Read Prakim. You'll understand what I'm saying. Read Rabbi Dr. Professor Mark Shapiro's doctorate. Melech Shapiro's doctorate. It's a fascinating doctorate. And it engendered a lot of controversy. I don't deny it. But that controversy can be understood if you understand what I'm saying right now. And it expressed itself in Rabbi Chiel Yaakov's life. He was a Mizrachiite. But he couldn't leave Aguda. His Rebbein was Agudista. He was a university person. But he couldn't combine that with the yeshiva element in him. And when they asked this poor soul who died in 66, childless, left he remains outside of his sfarim and outside of Mark's brilliant doctorate. They asked him, why don't you go on Aliyah? And he answered, if I go on Aliyah, I'm caught in controversy. Where do I go? Yeshivat Hebron or Hebrew University? It's not like Boston, where you can combine the two. Where do I go? Aguda or Mizrahi? Here in Switzerland, Moshe, you with me? Here in Switzerland, no one bothers me. I'm a individual. There's no Mizrahi, there's no Aguda, there's no yeshiva, there's no Hebrew, you understand? I got to remain here. But Avram Abba, and I have to tell you, Eitz Chaim Yeshiva of Switzerland, of Montre, am I pronouncing it right?
Montreux.
Forget it, I can't. Let me stick to an American pronunciation. Let me say it wrong. I've been corrected many times. Montreux, whatever, Montre, combine the two. It's the only yeshiva that the entire yeshiva came in Aliyah en masse. The entire yeshiva. It's the Hezda yeshiva here today. Eitz Chaim yeshiva. Its origins are Switzerland. Beautiful. Beautiful words. That's Rabbi Chiel Yaakov. I'm about to begin something that I went to mikveh this morning before I could say these words. I want to ask a question that only fools will ask, and I will try to propose an answer that is eternal and timely. All right, I've made my point. I've told this guy off in Borough Park who's giving me the hell, this is bad, that's bad, idiot. It's bad because you're not there. I've told off my students to tell me, Rebbe, we got to go back to America, we got to go back to Canada, we have to go back, we have to make them firm, we have to influence, we have to encourage Yiddishkeit. If that's your goal, make Israel firmer. Do whatever you want here, but make the country more religious, more pious. Add to it you, your wife, your children, your grandchildren, great-grandchildren. It's amazing what happens in life. Out of two people, you soon have tens and tens of descendants. The blink of an eye. The blink of an eye. I'm a great-grandfather. Baruch Hashem. The blink of an eye. But I want to ask a different question. I look at pictures of my forebears. And you know, I'm not one of these people to look yichish michis. I just, by accident, 2 years ago established, as you all know, that you read my read Washington, I tell the story of how my doctorate and Bernard Revels assigned to me, I want to write under Netziv and Bernie Lander. Bernie Lander breaks down and cries, and we relive it in Jerusalem many years later, both of us crying at the same moment that he cried 40 plus years earlier. And Bernie Lander says to me, it's my Rebbe, has no grandchildren, children never married, paid such a price for planting Torah in American soil. What you do will be his only monument. Little did I dream that in writing my doctorate and publishing afterwards, and there'll soon be a fourth edition of Bernard Revel, little did I dream I was writing about my own cousin. And I just found that out, Kaliachiyad, because I'm always looking for new books and reading and learning. And I found out it's my cousin. Same, my mother was right. That's her mother's family. But when I look at pictures of my forebears, and I don't know who's who, because my father's gone, and my mother already is, I can't ask her. And I see all these pictures of my great-grandparents, great-great-grandparents, long beards, payas, tichels down to their forehead. Why are we privileged? Who are we? What are we? Aaron Rakefet was just on it to speak at a Brit in Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. Don't take that for granted. I used to, you know, with college kids, you want to leave an impression. My mom used to pull this on the girls. I would say, Rachel, where are you sitting now? Rebbe, I'm in Yerushalayim. You're in Yerushalayim. What are you on a first name basis with Yerushalayim? Yerushalayim Ir HaKodesh. Repeat it. She'd repeat it. She wanted to get a good grade. She repeated it. Why are we privileged? Why our generation? We come from such good stock. We look at our forebears. To remain good Jews, I just told the kid who was starting to question religion, the kid thanked me, said I saved his life. I told him, you know, it's not just that you are davening. When you are davening, it's your grandfather davening and your great-grandfather and all the generations that came before you. And if you want generations after you to have this commitment and daven, you have to set an example. It's not just your davening. He has to understand what I said a moment ago at the talk. We live. Torah Jew lives past, present, and future in one. I heard that from the Rav with much Divrei Torah many times over. Why are we privileged? So I want to tell you a story now. I'm not going to finish this class, but let me begin. And you'll be able to use this no matter where you are, no matter where you're questioned. You can use this very constructively. You know, I learned in Lakewood. And I have in my soul a great love and depth of feeling to Reb Aaron Cutler in Lakewood that I experienced in Lithuanian air, etc. I think in my new book, I believe I do justice. I've yet to see someone who wrote of Reb Aaron, I think, as beautifully as I did in Washington. So whenever Lakewood had a fundraiser, I was in the Rapnet, Essex County, in Maplewood, New Jersey. Whenever there was a fundraiser, so Rav Shmuel Cutler would come to Rosh Yeshiva, and they would invite me, to, you know, as not only as a rabbi, but as a Talmud who had learned in Lakewood, I'd been invited by Rav Shmuel, and of course I would speak. So in 1968, in Essex County, I believe it was in Irvington, we had this big reception for Rav Shmuel Cutler, all the rabbanim came out, the shuls, the presidents, you know, a fundraiser. And this was 68. I already knew I was going in Aliyah, but I hadn't said anything publicly because I don't want to be a lame duck rabbi. And I get up, and I quote the Gemara in Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Dalet Amid Bet, the Gemara, Bikesh HaKadosh Baruch Hu La'asot Chizkiyahu Mashiach V'Sancheirev Gogu Magog. Amra midat hadin lifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Ribbono shel Olam, Umadavid melech Yisrael shema kamishirot v'tishpakot v'fanecha lo asito Mashiach. Chizkiyahu shasito lo kol anisim halalu v'lo amashir l'fanecha taseo Mashiach. Unbelievable Gemara. That Chadosh Baruch Hu wanted to make Chizkiyahu HaMelech, this is Mashiach, it came. And the fight with Sancheirib, the war with Sancheirib, the conflict with Sancheirib, this would be Mulchanet Gog Magog, this would be the end. We would reach the messianic area, the apocryphal point of history. And Midat Hadin says, Lefnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Bayishol, David Melech Yisrael, said so many shirot v'tishpachot, tehillim, etc. And you didn't make a Mashiach. And Chizkiyahu, that you did all these miracles, and he didn't know how to be thankful and say Shira, you're going to make a Mashiach. And it mixed the plan, it negated the plan, and abrogated the plan. What do you see from this Gemara? That in every generation, there's someone who can be Mashiach, but you have to know how to be thankful to the Almighty, how to say thanks, how to express your gratitude, how to intensify your commitment. And I spoke about the Six-Day War, the miracles that God did for us, the challenge that the Ribbono Shel Olam is throwing at us. We have to know how to respond. In every generation there can be a Mashiach, but it's up to the generation to be worthy. God can do so many miracles, but we have to show that we are worthy. And it behooves us now to intensify our commitment, to be more medagdek, careful, meticulous, in our observance, in our study of Torah, in our love for the state of Israel, going in Aliyah. And I make this, give this talk. Audience is quite receptive. And I see Reb Shneur Cutler is not pleased. And he comes over to me afterwards and he says, Min dafkut fashtein vitsa uptaichin. The Gemara. Translation. We have to understand how to explain this Gemara properly. So I knew he was not pleased. But all right, not going to argue with him. He didn't have the time to start giving his interpretation. It's a fundraiser. He's Lakewood. I'm already YU, Mizrahi, Bnei Akiva. Lakewood, a challenge. Gentlemen, you're sitting many, many years later. Thanks to Rabbi Emanuel Holzer, Shiroli Haver, a foolish Shlema, the man that saved my life when I came in Aliyah, started feeding me tapes of the Rav. So, I get this tape from Maria. Those of you who went Tuesday night to Moriah, anyone here who went? Anyone in this room? I mean, not the young rabbis. You're too young to have gone. Moriah, the Rav would give a shiur in Gemara. At the end of the shiur, he spoke divrei agada, divrei machshava, generally on the parsha. But as I said yesterday in class, and by the way, I thank you for your very kind words. I got such fabulous reaction to yesterday's shiur. Baruch Hashem. I'm very moved because what I'm doing was virgin territory. So, as I said in yesterday's shiur, shiur cut. You find the peg on which to hang your hat. So the Rav, I'm listening to the Rav. I fainted. My divrei Torah. Rebbe is saying exactly the same thing. He's quoting the Gemara. And he's explaining and developing in every generation there can be a Mashiach. It's not that we're lacking great individuals, not that we're lacking someone who can be Mashiach. What we're lacking is the people are not yet worthy. More frustrating. 1982, Reb Shneur Cutler died young. He had great aggravation in his life. He had a son who, by the way, studied for a while in Alon Shvut by Reb Aaron Lichtenstein. And that son, lo aleinu, went back to America, and that terrible machla, I plead with you, those of you who are not going to be mechanchim or rabbanim, which is the most important calling for a Jewish boy, but if you don't have that ability, you have to use, if you have a good head, and you know how to analyze a shach and a taz, and you know how to analyze a Reb Chaim and a Rambam and a Ravid, you have to be doctors, and you have to do research, medical research, and we have to find a cure for cancer. Reb Shneur's son died very young, and that aggravation, it's 1979, he never recovered. It's the famous story of the Blushev Rebbe. Do you know the story or not? How the Blushev Rebbe came, it's written up in Professor Yaffa Eliach's book on Hasidic stories out of the Holocaust. He came in, Lenachim Avel, Reb Shneur Cutler, and Reb Shneur was sitting there in total silence, total mourning. The room was filled with endless Talmidim, and no one is saying a word. Well, no, the Gemara says that you don't say a word until the Avel starts the conversation. So the Blushiva Rebbe saw that Reb Yisrael Shpiro, he saw that Reb Shneur is not going to speak. Reb Shneur is not going to speak. So he said on Shuldeik, excuse me, I know what the Gemara says, but let me say a word to the Rosh Yeshiva. And he spoke with him about we who went through the Holocaust, we have no monument, we have no place to visit, we don't even know the day of death. At least be comforted that you had a son, you taught a son, he studied, you knew your son. Your son actually has a child. His wife, I believe the child was born before he died, or she was pregnant at the time. There's something that survives. You have to be comforted. And he tried his best to give consolation to the Lakewood Rosh Yeshiva. Two and a half years later, the Rosh Yeshiva died, and I couldn't even go to his funeral. He was buried here. It was during the Lebanese War, and I was up on the Damascus-Beirut highway. That's where my unit was stationed when the funeral took place. But I want you to know, if I could have only gone back to Reb Shneur Cutler, I would have said to him, Rebbe, ihr gedenkst mit viel Jotzerik in 1968, I better say it in English, Rebbe, do you remember that in 1968 I spoke at that fundraiser and you called me to task and smacked my face and said that I didn't say proper pshat in the Gemara? Your Rebbe and my Rebbe, Rebbe Yosef Dova, Levi Soloveitchik, said exactly the same pshat and said it better. And let me add and end. And the Rav wrote a proof. No, my Tanwok is looking at me. What's going on here? Aaron Rakefit became a Chabadnik? He read all the papers on Shabbos. What went on? The Rebbe, yes, Mashiach, not Mashiach, Mashiach and Chodah, Melech Mashiach, Heskat Mashiach, this could be Mashiach, really up Mashiach. Well, Rakefit off the wall. He doesn't want to say the Rav is off the wall, but Rakefit off the wall. Matan is asking. Matan, the Rav wrote an irrefutable proof to this thought. Gentlemen, give us a list of phony messiahs. Who does it begin with? Don't tell me Shabtai Tzvi. Go back to Chazal. Bar Kokhba. Right or wrong? Who carried his utensils, ran before him? Rebbe Akiva. And the Rav says, look into the Rambam. Whenever the Rambam mentions Bar Kokhba, he calls him a melech, a king. You see from the Rambam that in potential, b'koach b'yibrit meduberet, b'koach ba could have been the King Messiah. The generation was not worthy. It's not that Rabbi Akiva made a mistake, but the generation was not worthy. Hilchot Taniyot, Perek Hey, Halacha Gimel, where the Rambam describes the fast days, the Tisha B'Av, the Chamisha Devarim, five things happened. And he tells the story, the Rambam of Beta, V'hayuba lafim u'rababot me'Yisrael, V'hayalahem melech gadol, underline the word melech. Moshe, when you reprint the Rambam, print the words melech in big, dark, bold letters, the dimu, kol Yisrael, u'gadol hachamim, shehu melech hamashiach. Wow. And then he goes on to tell the story of what went wrong. But you see from the Rambam, the Gemara in Sanhedrin is correct. This is the right inference. This is the right conclusion. Hilchot Malachim, Perek Yud Aleph, Halacha Gimel. And the Rambam says, V'yaleh ol daitcha shemelch ha-mashiach tzirich la-tol la-sot ol totum ob-sim. Don't think that King Messiah has to do miracles. Ein davakach. Shaharei Rebbe Akiva chacham gadol mechachmei ha-mishna haya. V'hu haya nosei keilav shel ben kaziba ha-melech. Underline it in the Rambam, bold letters. V'hu haya omelav shehu ha-melech ha-mashiach. V'dimahu v'chol chachmei doro, shehu melech ha-mashiach, ad sheneherag ba'avonot. Finally, he was killed because of the sins of the generation. Wow. The Rambam who never wasted an extra word. The Rambam who, according to Reb Chaim, every nuance has meaning. Whenever he referred to Bakochva, it was Bakochva HaMelech. Reb Shneur Cutler, your humble servant, was totally online back in Hanukkah 1968 when we had that reception for Lakewood Yeshiva. So what do we see from this gentleman? In order for our generation to be worthy, many generations were more pious, many generations were more wonderful. But these generations did not answer the call of God. They couldn't. They didn't have the power. They didn't have the ability. The times were not with them. Something happened now that made our generation very unique, that we were able to rise and say Shira and answer the call. And that's why, perhaps, we were privileged, as I will show you, Be'ezrat Hashem, next time we meet. So to reiterate, let me just reiterate, Rabbi Rubin, yeah? Right, he said that many times. We would have been, assimilation would have, right.
So it isn't that God was so good that we got to the Israel because we were better than the other generation. But the opposite. We got the Medina Israel because it was an antidote for the illness of assimilation.
Right, and I want to show you that we rose to the challenge. You can take the Rav's point of view, and I've spoken about that many times. As the Rebbe said, Chassidim said, why was Chassidus revealed? Because had Chassidus not been revealed at that time, the Jew in Poland would have been totally lost, totally gone, depressed, downtrodden. The sun was not shining for him, to paraphrase my talk of earlier. Got it? But I want to show you that with all the negativism, something happened here that had never happened before. It was very unique. And that I will show you next week.
Yeah, 2 weeks.
2 weeks' time. Gentlemen, to reiterate, I spoke about, I repeated, I explained, I spoke about the fact that we are a democracy. What happens in a democracy is up to us. This is Israel. Everything we do here is lasting. Make it better. Contribute. I quoted Rabbi Yechiel Yaakov Ha'adam Eitz HaSadeh. And then I asked that unbelievable question, Lama Zachinu? I quoted the Gemara in Sanhedrin. I told you the story of Ani Rothkopf, Rabbi Shneur Katla. And then I hear the Rav, and the Rav says it a million times better, bringing an unbelievable proof from the Rambam. Okay? The challenge is ours. How did we rise to the occasion? Next week, we can't have class, Hanukkah. The school is off, the kollel is off, Sunday, Monday. We pick up again 2 weeks from now. And Be'ezrat HaNotein LaYov Koach Et Shpia Chagorim Sameach with only fabulous news Olenu V'Alkal Yisrael. Thank you very much. Das V'danya. Rest up. The next class begins in 10 minutes.